make sure that
did you stay at the Holiday Inn?
I ended up staying at the Quality Inn.
Okay, that's a lot more. Yes, that's more convenient for both down, Alcoing, ourselves, and cheaper, I guess.
A little bit. I had talked to Colleen, and she had indicated that's what she had stayed when she came out to visit you. Well, it looks like that's working well. I can hear you very nicely. And why don't we then get started? This is Jim Boning of the Center for History of Chemistry talking with Raymond F. Boyer on January 14, 1986, in Dr. Boyer's office at the Michigan Molecular Institute. Dr. Boyer, you were born on February 6, 1910 in Denver, Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me something about your parents, their names, your father's occupation?
Well, my father grew up on a farm in Ohio, Mount Hope, Ohio, and he wandered around a lot, finally ended up in Denver, Colorado, where he met my mother. She was born in Sioux City, Iowa, and had gone to Denver as the metropolis of that area, so that's where they met. And several years after I was born, my father decided to move back to Ohio because his mother had died, and his father was getting on years and was all alone. So they came back and first went to a village, Beach City, Ohio, and were there for several years, and then moved about 20 miles away to Millersburg, Ohio. And that was the county seat of Holmes County. A population around 2,500 to 2,000. And there's where I had my schooling from grades 1 through 9.
Were there any particular teachers at that time that influenced you?
I'd say the teachers, by and large, were excellent, as you know they tended to be.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps the eighth grade teacher left the most lasting impression, partly because she was a tyrant, but extremely good.
Did you go to high school in Millersburg, or did you?
My father was an entrepreneur, I think is the best description for him. And in Millersburg, he operated a dry cleaning and laundry establishment. And for many years, it was the only one in town. And then competition moved in with some newer equipment, and he decided that Millersburg did not need two such places, and so he simply got out. And for several years, he leased land for oil using the old witch hazel stick to prosper for oil. So.
Was that in the Millersburg area? Or
yes. Well, it was all over Ohio.
I see.
And it was a hot state then for oil potential, and so that's what he did. And then that didn't last very long, and then he took a temporary position in Cleveland, Ohio, operating a confectionery stand, popcorn, peanuts, salted nuts, and so on.
Did you go to high school in Cleveland then?
No. I don't know how much you want about my father, but...
Well, that, whatever you want, that'd be fine.
I was going to say that then he didn't like being away from home, living in Millersburg, working in Cleveland, Ohio, and he decided to move to Canton, Ohio. Population then of about 250,000. And he had a position then at a park concession, popcorn, peanuts, soft drinks again. And from there, he went into business for himself in a new market which was opening up in Canton. And I worked after school in that market of his for about 3 years. After school, Saturdays, nights, and so on. And that led to a tug of war between him and my mother. She wanted me to go to college. He wanted me to stay and inherit his business, so to speak. Well, she won. But I went to high school in Canton, Ohio, then. It had one senior high school for a town of 250,000. And so they had about 4,000 students. And because I did, that was grades 10 through 12. And because I did very well in the opening, in the first year, I got put in a class for outstanding students with, special teachers, the best.
What influenced you to move into physics when you went to Case and studied physics?
Now, since I was about 10 years old, I had an interest in electricity. And I always had a shop in my house. And it was mostly full of junk, but very important to me. And I think, as far as I know, this was probably the Thomas Edison influence in Ohio. And also a magazine by Hugo Gernsback. Gernsbach. Called The Electrical Experimenter, as I recall. So those were the influences that were prominent from about 10 on. I never went into radio for some reason. I had friends who did, but I don't know. It wasn't Thomas Edison. That's all I can imagine. And now, I don't know if you're interested in the choice of Case.
Yes, absolutely.
Because that was...
But before we get to Case, were there any teachers in Canton, in your high school, that you remember in terms of the chemistry or the physics, the math, that you may have taken?
Oh, yes.
That influenced you? That
yeah. Yeah. There was a Miss Heinrichs, H-E-I-N-R-I-C-H-S, chemistry. There was a Miss Lutz, L-U-T-Z, in Latin, and a Mr. Metzger METZGER, in physics. And there was a superb math teacher whose name I can't remember, but he was teaching advanced math then. So I had a full...
Did you have any leanings towards physics over chemistry, or was it at that time it was...
No. No, I'll get to that.
Okay.
It's kind of... I miss being valedictorian of the class by a bad grade in physics. So... I just goofed on one exam.
Mm.
But anyway, I think the choice of case is rather crucial because case led to Dow.
Mm-hmm.
But a high school friend of mine and I had looked around for colleges and we traveled. We wanted something in... Well, I wanted electrical engineering, no question about it, and he wanted mechanical, so we made the rounds from Carnegie Tech to Ohio State to Purdue, Notre Dame, University of Chicago, and couldn't make a decision. And about a month before college was to start, in the fall of 29, we were visiting at a friend's house, and the mother said, "Why don't you go to Case? There's a famous man there who works in musical sound and has written a book on the flute. And his name is Dr. Miller." Well, we grabbed it. And without ever having seen the campus, it was only 60 miles away, we enrolled.
And so you visited all the other schools.
Yeah.
This Dr. Miller, was he in physics?
He was Dayton C. Miller, who was in acoustics. And the musical sound was a hobby, and he was doing ether drift experiments, and a wonderful lecturer. I was still committed to electrical engineering when I went to Case, and I indicated that choice on my enrollment form, and I met at a fraternity rushing situation a man who was working at the Bureau of Standards in radio propagation, and when I told him my interest, he says, "You don't want to be an electrical engineer, you want to be a physicist."
Hmm.
And that was it.
Were there any specific faculty at Case that...
Well, yes. Because I, in a placement exam, I was in the top 10, and turned out that we got some good teachers that way. And one of them was the professor of astronomy. His name was Nassau. N-A-S-S-A-U, Jason J. Nassau. And he taught freshman math. And I think he was the first one to recognize any potential in me. And he remained Well, a lifelong friend.
What about physics?
My father died at the end of the freshman year during exam week. And sometime after that, I had a chance encounter with Professor Nassau and told him that I didn't think I could go back to school because of lack of funds. This was in the spring of 1930, and the Depression was on and so on. And he told me that there was an opening at the school observatory for a custodian, student custodian, and that he thought he could get that for me. Well, he did. So I moved into that observatory, free room, a kitchen with cooking privileges, and so on. And that really was what allowed me to go to school. I enrolled then in physics the start of the sophomore year and stayed with it throughout. But Nassau was a proselytizer, and he persuaded me to do a thesis in astronomy. I had been familiar with all the equipment. I assisted at public nights, and I knew how to run the telescope, and I knew the stars, the whole business, just by living there. And he was certainly the dominant figure. He was nominally a member of the physics department, but the rest of the staff there, well, they weren't very good. They weren't outstanding. Miller was approaching retirement, and there were some, oh, the editor of the handbook in chemistry and physics, Hodgman, was on the staff there. He let the people teach themselves. Mm. We get assigned a chapter in the book on optics, and we gave the lecture. He sat back and did nothing. It was, well, I don't know. There were six of us in that, enrolled in that physics course. But,
do you recall who some of the others were that were with you at the time?
Oh, yeah. Nussbaum in USSS, BAUM, X-rays, X-ray crystallography, he was quite good. But he never amounted to anything. On the, in the big scene, there was a man named Wallace, who W-A-L-L-A-C-E, who was simply drawing his pay. He taught, but indifferently. There was another one. I had it a minute ago, and it's gone. Who was a good teacher, but his chief claim to fame was that he discovered that spider webs made very good crosshairs in microscopes, and he had a business running to supply spider webs to. Well, this is the kind of. There were some good people. Of course, you took courses all over the campus in different disciplines, and there were enough good teachers. The math was, I'd say, quite good. generally very good. So there was enough teachers around, good teachers around, to end up with, I think, a decent education.
How many chemistry courses did you take?
Two.
Do you recall who you had?
General chemistry was taught by William Reed Veazey. V-E-A-Z-E-Y. Have you ever come across?
Yes, I'm sure we're going to mention his name before we're finished.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because he was already at the time you were there, he was working at Dow and Summers, wasn't he?
Yes.
Consulting for Dow.
Yes, and then later he moved
mm-hmm.
here permanently, and I worked for him here later.
Mm-hmm.
The physical chem class was taught by a man named Lang. L-A-N-G-E, Norbert Lang. He was the co-editor, I guess, of the Handbook of Chemistry and Physics. I think that's right, Hodgman and Lang. And he was excellent as a teacher.
You took general chemistry and physical chemistry, no organic?
No organic, never had a course in organic chemistry. Somewhere along the line, there was a lab in analytical chemistry.
That's interesting.
That was the extent of it.
You said you did a thesis. That was for the bachelor's degree? In astronomy.
In astronomy.
Okay. And then you continued on for an MS degree.
Well, when I tried to get a job in the spring of 33, went around to the industrial centers. They wanted to know what my thesis was. When I said astronomy, that was the end. They made it very clear that they couldn't possibly want an astronomer. So when I went back, I really didn't see how I could possibly go back, but then some teaching assistantships opened up in the fall of 33, and I think it was Nassau who got me one of them. But now I was in the physics department at Case, and I was a laboratory instructor. This is a 2-year arrangement, $50 a month, part of which went home to support my mother. And that got to be pretty exciting. But I decided that I wasn't going to do any more in astronomy, even though NASA wanted me to. So I signed up with Nussbaum, and the master's thesis was on the X-ray crystallography of steel at high temperature. In the region of the so-called alpha transition.
Was that done in conjunction with any of the steel companies?
No.
Cleveland?
No. No, I don't know whether he consulted with any other. It's a good possibility, but I wasn't.
You weren't aware of
that? I wasn't aware
mm-hmm.
of that. And the joke of it was, we had a persistent problem in getting the photographs, and he was of no. Nussbaum was of no help.
Mm.
And on the day I graduated, I realized what the problem was. I solved it. It was so damn simple that it was ironic. And started turning out decent X-ray spectrographs. And had made the thesis. But see. What next?
All right, well, I guess that brings us to... Well, let me ask you this before we move to Dow. What happened to your friend who went with you to Case? And were there any other students with you at the time that you recall?
Well, my friend went through Case and had an indifferent 4 years in mechanical engineering and got a job somewhere in Cleveland. Indifferent job and did nothing with his career.
Were there any other student colleagues that...
Well, the group in the physics department, the fellow students, the six of us, were a rather remarkable group for the most part. One of them was named Briggs Hazelhurst, Hazelhurst, Napier. And he was a descendant of the two men who invented the logarithm.
Oh, yes.
And he was quite a brain. He never made anything out of his life. Teaching and mental breakdown and nothing. There was a man named Harrington, Robert A. Harrington, who ended up at Goodrich. Very brilliant. These guys used to make me feel like I'm ignoramus. They were so sharp. And he never did anything with his career at Goodrich. He was useful. He had memorized a fourth-place logarithm table, just for instance. that was the kind of... another man was named Prettyman. P-R-E-T-T-Y-M-A-N. Irving is his first name. He ended up at Firestone. And, well, he retired from there. I'd say he didn't distinguish himself at all. He just did good work on physics, polymer physics, rubber physics.
Well, I guess that brings us then to your finishing up at Case, and we had mentioned Professor Deasy earlier. I understand that he was quite instrumental in getting people to Dow if he saw a student who was good. Did he influence your decision to go to Dow?
Not at all.
Did you have other choices?
I don't know. What happened was that the professor of astronomy, Nassau, came to Midland in the spring of 35 to give a lecture on astronomy before the Midland Case Club. And as you know, there were plenty of Case men there. And he got the grand tour of Dow. Of course, he knew no chemistry. But he came back to Cleveland, and the one thing he really remembered is that they were using electrical currents of 10,000 amperes to generate chlorine. And he saw all these big cables and all the electrical machinery and everything else.